Madison Mayor Paul Soglin said yesterday at a press conference that he suggested Foxconn take over the shuttered Oscar Mayer site, or perhaps consider a couple of undeveloped sites on the city's edges for what is rumored to be a medical-related facility. Maybe, maybe not. Meanwhile, a public hearing was held on the $3 billion incentive package for Foxconn. That's where we begin this week in review with Louis Fortas and Michelle Litchens. Louis is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Louis, welcome back to the program.
Good morning.
And Michelle is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Michelle, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, a state assembly committee held a hearing yesterday on this $3 billion tax incentive package that's part of an agreement to bring Foxconn to Wisconsin. Michelle, let's start off with you. How would you have weighed in at yesterday's public hearing?
A long hearing, wasn't it? But yeah. I think they really did a good job. I think Secretary Neitzel came out with a lot of enthusiasm and explained as much as he could about why the governor was proposing what he was proposing in this bill. This really is, you know, a once in a generation, if not once in a century, lifetime and opportunity. Can you imagine bringing 13,000 jobs to Wisconsin? I mean, even if it was only half that number, 6,000 jobs, they would be still one of our largest employers in the state. And just the number of people that would follow this business to Wisconsin, this is a fascinating, wonderful opportunity, and I'm so excited that it's happening right now during my lifetime. As far as the hearing yesterday, I think they did a great job having, especially the people who testified did a great job asking questions and exposing some of the lies that might be out there right now, especially about some of these environmental changes that people are starting to be concerned about. So I was happy with how yesterday went.
Well, proceedings began with testimony from invited speakers and lawmakers who opened up the floor for public comments later that day, yesterday. And so let's listen to Democratic Representative Todd Onstad, who weighed in.
I have many unanswered questions and concerns at this time, as the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has not yet provided a fiscal analysis of this bill. I am disappointed that we don't have the data we need to fully analyze this deal at this time.
Louis, what concerns do you have? Do you share these concerns?
Well, first of all, I do agree that I think it's really a wonderful thing if we can get pretty much what's being said in terms of, you know, somewhere in the 3,000 to 13,000 jobs. I think it's going to be toward the lower end. But still, I mean, that's not insignificant. I think the fact that you're beginning to make southeastern Wisconsin more of a technology center if this develops. So I think there's a lot of positive to this. It's certainly going to be a big multiplier effect, and it's going to create other jobs, and all of that's wonderful. But, you know, the problem is we don't know enough about how the deal is being structured. The stuff we do know, I mean, the biggest concern I have is, number one, some of these softenings or waiving of environmental regulations. I think that's more serious than Michelle seemed to indicate. And I don't know if there are people, you know, she said something about the lies out there. I don't know if there's necessarily lies. There's just a lot of information that we don't know. There's no fiscal note. So we need to know a little more what's going on. But the big issue is the tax incentives, and unlike a lot of my friends, I don't have a big problem with a large tax incentive package as long as it's not a refundable tax credit. It's a refundable tax credit, you're basically writing a check to Foxconn. If it's not a refundable one and they can just carry the tax credit forward, I don't care how long it takes, and if we give them, you know, $3 billion in these tax credits, we wouldn't be getting that money if they weren't there. So you're basically, you know, not losing anything. But so I would love to see the thing be a non-refundable tax credit. If that change were made and we tightened up on some of the environmental regulations, I think it would be a very good deal.
Michelle, any changes you want to see to this $3 billion package?
Not necessarily at the moment. I mean, I do agree, Lou's got a point there about non-refundable tax credits. But when I was talking about some of the environmental regulations, I mean, we've heard that environmental regulations are going to change, and that's not necessarily true. I mean, absolutely nothing will change when it comes to the water that comes out of their facility, any air pollution. I mean, we have allowed them to, I don't want to say sidestep, but there really is no reason that we duplicate an environmental impact statement. And when you start looking at some of the requirements for a business to expand, it's another opportunity as a state to say, why are we requiring these businesses to duplicate so many of these things?
But to come back on that point, Michelle, there are softening of environmental regulations in this package. Foxconn will be able to build on wetlands, for instance.
It will be able to build, and businesses build on wetlands every day. And instead, right now, when you displace a wetland, you are required to create 1.5 acres for every 1 acre you disturb. This bill actually requires them to create 2 acres for every acre they disturb. So that really is no different than what any other business does right now.
Lewis, do you think that the federal regulations are enough here in this Foxconn deal? Do we need some DNR oversight in what Foxconn will build in this southeastern Wisconsin?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, we had, we used to have a kind of a world-class DNR. It's still very good, but it's not as good as it was, say, 10 years ago. But we have, we live off of natural resources. One of the big industries is tourism, and people go up to northern Wisconsin, an area that needs a lot of, you know, jobs and a lot of development. And we don't want to destroy, you know, Wisconsin's natural resources. So when you start loosening up regulations in one place, then you're setting precedents, and you're going, people are going to be coming back saying it was done there. We can do this, and I think we could do a lot to tighten that up without killing the deal. I mean, nobody wants to kill the deal. I don't think this is a deal killer if you tighten up the DNR regulations.
Talking right now for a week in review with Michelle Litchens. She's a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Also with us, Lewis Fortas. He's editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former Democratic state representative. Talking about Foxconn developments this week in the week in review. Where do you stand on Foxconn? Weigh in 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What are you looking for as Foxconn comes to Wisconsin? What precedent do you want them to set? Are you looking for one of the jobs? Do you want to work for Foxconn? Are you concerned about environmental issues here? 800-642-1234. We've been talking about their $10 billion plant employing perhaps up to 13,000 people in the southeastern part of the state. That has been one of the promises here, that the jobs could mount to up to 13,000. It's also being reported this week that Foxconn is considering expanding its presence, its footprint, to the Dane County area. Madison Mayor Paul Soglin says he was contacted last week by the Madison Region Economic Partnership, and he suggested that the recently shuttered Oscar Mayer plant as a possible site, but he has not talked to state government or company representatives. Let's take a listen here.
We have absolutely no intention in any location to waive any environmental regulations. Secondly, we are not at all interested in participating in a race to the bottom in regards to competing with financial incentives that are not viable for this community.
Michelle, what do you make of Mayor Soglin here and what he's saying?
I think that he may change a few of his tunes if he does start talking directly with a business that would like to build not only and use the Oscar Mayer site, but perhaps more than one site than that. This is so exciting, again, for our state. These are jobs that are coming that are well-paying, family-sustaining jobs. We used to be an exporter of engineers in Wisconsin. What an opportunity to be a net importer of engineers in our state. So it's fun to watch this happen. Again, I think Mayor Soglin may change his tune just a little bit. I mean, there are other states that would offer more money to Foxconn to build in their state. So it's sad. I mean, as a conservative, a fiscal conservative, I don't want to give corporations money to expand or build in our state, but unfortunately, that just is the way of the world nowadays. And so if Wisconsin wants to be competitive and bring some of these businesses to our state, unfortunately, that's something that we have to do. And I think Mayor Soglin will probably find himself doing more than he would have liked to because he wants those jobs in his area as well.
Lewis, it sounds like Soglin is open to talking but wants to be on his terms in his community.
Well, that's a good starting point. I think, you know, what Mayor Soglin has to offer is the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And so, and that's a big draw, and that's an important factor for a plant location like Foxconn is discussing for Madison. But again, I don't think, and I agree with the mayor on this, I don't think if you start, holding tight on your environmental standards, now you're going to kill the deal. I don't think those are deal killers. I think you can work around it. And again, with the tax credits that they want, I would be very generous with the tax credits as long as they're not refundable, as long as you're basically forgiving them of various taxes they would be paying, because you wouldn't be getting those taxes if they weren't there. And if that goes on for 30 years or 40 years, I couldn't care less. Let them carry it forward. Don't refund it.
Let's take a call now. Scott in Madison. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, guys. I just got a big concern here. Foxconn CEO and stuff, this guy, again, he's been kind of shoddy down in the past. How do we know this is even going to happen yet in Wisconsin? And we're all talking about Foxconn. That's all we're talking about. I mean, what kind of commitment? We haven't even broken ground or nothing. And I just don't believe this whole thing is going to happen. And I think we're all jumping the gun here. I really, really do. Let's get a commitment from Foxconn, more of a commitment as to what's going on, and have some money put down in Wisconsin that they're really going to follow through on this.
Michelle.
Done.
Right. Well, it is just kind of exciting to talk about, which is why I think everyone's talking about it a lot right now. But Foxconn won't receive any money until they start employing people in Wisconsin. So we're not giving any money away until they actually break ground. But this is another reason why I believe the Assembly and the Senate have to come together. They need to pass this legislation so that we can show Foxconn we do want you here and we want you to start digging ground immediately.
Well, we'll continue digging into the latest news about Foxconn during this week in review. What do you make of the Foxconn news this week? 800-642-1234. It is the week in review. And Lewis Fortas is here, Michelle Litchens as well. Lewis is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Michelle is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. We'll be back after this break here on the Ideas Network. It is Friday, and thus our week in review on the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy this week. We're looking at the ramifications of the Foxconn deal and getting your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or post about Foxconn on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Lewis Fortas and Michelle Litchens stay with us. Lewis is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Michelle is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Gary on Facebook writes, "This is a great opportunity to attract real industry and manufacturing jobs that have all too rare in Wisconsin lately, thanks to the Democratic Party." He says, "A few tax breaks and some streamlining of the regulatory process should help move things along." Lewis.
How am I supposed to respond to that? Is that your question?
Yeah. How would you respond to Gary?
I get a kick out of the, it's because of the Democrats. So I think in that way, the Democrats and the Republicans have both tried to, build the economy as much as they can. They had two different strategies. The Republican strategy, as you've seen with Governor Walker, is that you try to weaken labor, you try to weaken environmental regulations, you try to basically provide, compete with, kind of the lower wage states like the southern states, like the Alabamas, Mississippis, and that. The Democrats have always come in with a strategy of put more money into education, build our universities, strengthen our training programs, and try to compete against the Massachusetts and the Connecticuts and the Californias for the higher end jobs. So I think both sides have tried to create jobs in Wisconsin and develop business in Wisconsin, but they've done it in different ways. I think this is an interesting opportunity. I think this could kind of be a combination of both, in the sense of, again, I have no problem with the tax credits. And again, the $3 billion tax credits, it's a huge number. That doesn't frighten me at all. What bothers me is the stuff at the margins where, and it's not going to kill the deal, but you have to keep keep Wisconsin, Wisconsin. Keep our environmental regulations. Don't start just kind of dropping all our standards in order to attract this one business. Because if you do it with this,
let's let Ann in Milwaukee jump in here. Ann, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My comment is that this deal is terrible. I was listening to Representative Chris Taylor. She had been reading through the bill and reading analysis of the bill. And she says, look, Foxconn is going to have zero tax liability, and they're going to get, tax breaks that are paid back to them. So we are literally going to be paying the salaries as taxpayers of the workers that work at Foxconn. So money is going to be going directly into Foxconn's corporate budget from the state of Wisconsin. I mean, we could just as easily pay a lump sum of $3 billion and split it between every person in the state.
Let's get Michelle to weigh in. Michelle.
Certainly. Well, Anne, we can't just come up with $3 billion to distribute around the state, because we wouldn't have that additional revenue coming into the state. It would only be $3 billion if they were to rise to $800 million a year in payroll. Think of that number, $800 million just of individuals working at that one Foxconn location in Racine or Kenosha. That is a tremendous amount of revenue coming into our state. And as Gary said before, this is a real industry. These are not $10, $11, $12 an hour jobs coming into our state. They said the average salary is $54,000 a year with benefits. Those are family-sustaining jobs. This is money coming into our state, and this is just such exciting news, and I do think we need to be celebrating this.
Let's go to David now in Madison with some thoughts on Foxconn. David, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have so many concerns about this bill, but I want to focus on the environmental regulations and the loosening of them. It's not so simple as saying that, it used to be that you could build over a wetland so long as you replaced it at 1.5. There's a whole permitting process that goes where DNR and EPA provide consent to the Army Corps of Engineers, or provide the advice to the Army Corps of Engineers, who then permits it. And very high quality wetlands usually do not go into that because they are reviewed before that happens. If you skip that process, then who knows what really high-quality wetlands are going to be destroyed. Also, it's not an issue of just the water coming out of the plants. It's the water going in. If you pump too much water out of the ground, you're going to kill these wetlands just as much as you would if you put a parking lot over it.
Well, let's get Lewis here to jump in. Lewis?
I trust your caller probably knows more about wetlands than I do. But it sounds trivial, a lot of these things, when you read it in the newspaper and you say, well, they just want to be able to pave over or work, fill in the wetlands and do various things like that. They're not trivial. I mean, the wetlands is a serious issue. And they're talking about Foxconn, discharging their dredge materials to fill the wetlands. I mean, you don't know what's exactly in it. This is a company that's going to be dealing with some serious heavy metals when you deal with electronics. And I don't know what's going into our, you know, what's going to be in that dredge that they're going to be putting into the wetlands. So I agree with the caller. I mean, this is a lot more serious than it's kind of being dealt with or treated as. It's a serious issue, the environmental issue. But again, I don't think anyone wants to see this this deal fail. I think this is an important deal. I think we're dealing with a governor who's made a huge promise in his first election to create 250,000 jobs in his first term. He didn't even come up to half of that. I think he's approaching this from a very weakened position because he's going to be running for re-election. He desperately needs some kind of victory in terms of job creation. He sees this as a golden opportunity for himself, and I think he's going to negotiate pretty weakly in order to make sure he gets the deal, and I think that's unfortunate. I think he has Scott Neitzel involved in this, who's a very smart guy, but he still he has to be, you know, listening to the governor, and so that's the problem there. But I think we should not trivialize the waiving and weakening of the environmental regulations. I think it's serious.
Michelle, final few words here as we wrap up on Foxconn, move to the next topic. We've got a lot of ground to cover.
Right. Thank you. The water would be coming out of Lake Michigan. It would not be coming out of the aquifers, which I think is important. And then the water would be cleaned and returned to Lake Michigan. I am a huge supporter of wetlands. I want that water to go back into the ground, into our water table. They will have plenty of surrounding area. I mean, the Army Corps of Engineers is not going to let them just divert the water off somewhere else where it doesn't belong. This is an area that if you drive up Interstate 94 right now, it will be developed. You look at it right now, and Uline is expanding on one side. Amazon has built these huge buildings on the other side. This land will be developed. Now, whether it will be developed with 20, you know, Lambeau Field size buildings with Foxconn or whether it's developed by other industries and housing, it will be developed eventually. And I do trust the Army Corps of Engineers that they are going to preserve our wetlands in the process.
It is the Weekend We Review here on the Joy Cardine Show. Michelle Litchens is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Louis Fortas is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former Democratic state representative. We're moving on from Foxconn now to talk about health care. We learned this week Molina Healthcare is pulling out of healthcare.gov in Wisconsin. Does this impact you and your family? 800-642-1234. We'll also be talking about President Trump wants Congress to do something about health care, but the Senate seems to be focusing on other issues for the immediate future. Is this the right thing to do? Join in at 800-642-1234. As I was mentioning there, Molina Healthcare pulling out of Wisconsin's marketplaces. The California-based insurer announced it will not be selling policies under the Affordable Care Act marketplaces in Wisconsin and Utah. Decision affecting 30 counties in Wisconsin, about 29,000 people. This is the third national insurer to exit Wisconsin's federal marketplace. Michelle, what about this move?
Well, this makes financial sense to them because they were losing millions of dollars. This is just another example of why we need to fix Obamacare. And I guess another example of why we should send this all back to the states. That before Obamacare, 95% of Wisconsinites were covered by health insurance. We had the high-risk insurance sharing pool. We knew how to take care of people who were uninsurable in our state. We knew how to insure the poor and make sure that they had access to health care. So this is just another example of why Washington needs to get their act together and send health care back to the states, because we know how to get it done, and we certainly knew how to do it in Wisconsin. But again, Molina's leaving, which is sad, but they couldn't make any money doing this, and so no business is going to operate when they continue to lose millions of dollars. We still have 12 other insurance companies operating in Wisconsin. We are very fortunate. There are many other states out there, Alabama and others, that are down to one insurance company that's providing insurance due to Obamacare. So this is just another reason, again, why they need to act.
Well, Lewis, turning to the national stage, the U.S. Senate seems to be moving on from health care, at least for now. On Tuesday, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell laid out his short-term priorities, confirming presidential nominees, one of them, passing bills related to the VA and the Food and Drug Administration, another. In September, McConnell says the Senate will turn its attention to a tax bill. It was also announced that the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions would begin holding health care hearings in September, which won't focus on a broad repeal of the current health care law, but rather on smaller scale measures needed to stabilize these Obamacare marketplaces. Lewis, what does this say to you about how Congress is thinking about health care at this point in time?
Well, I think that you have a few people who are acting like adults. One of them is Lamar Alexander, a Republican senator from Tennessee, and he is the chair of the committee that would be dealing with this, and he's teaming up with Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington State. And they're beginning to do what Michelle was saying, take a look at Obamacare, and basically no one feels Obamacare is perfect. Everyone admits that there's problems. I mean, when you create a bill that is, you know, is dealing with one-seventh of the U.S. economy, you're not going to get it right the first shot. You're going to, you know, take a shot at it, and then you're going to fix it up and repair it. What's been going on is this idea of this repeal and replace. It's a disaster. All this stuff that Donald Trump and others are saying has just weakened the market. It's created a lot of uncertainty. The insurance companies are frightened to death because they're saying we can't bid, we can't set pricing when we don't know if we're going to be getting the subsidies to cover our waiving the copays and deductibles to low-income people. So they're uncertain. They're raising their rates. And also, when you're threatening to not have the mandate, they're saying, well, you know, the healthy people aren't going to get into the risk pool, so we're not going to have a legitimate insurance risk pool. So I think Alexander and others are beginning to say, listen, you know, we have to drop the politics, and we have to finally do something that is right for our constituents, and we have to repair the system that we have. And so I'm optimistic that they will come up with some repairs. Will it be perfect? No. But will it be a step forward? I certainly hope so. In terms of tax reform, I mean, Trump is interested in basically lowering taxes for the wealthy, as the Republicans have always done whenever they dealt with tax reform. And so I don't, if he thought health care was difficult, tax reform is equally difficult. So we're going to see what happened on this one. This is going to be another interesting battle.
Well, let's get Nate in Milwaukee to jump in here on this issue. Nate, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was just calling in because I didn't hear something that I thought was a very important factor, and that is a lot of insurance companies that are dropping or talking about dropping are complaining about the uncertainty because Trump might actually try to sabotage Obamacare by keeping things like subsidies that are supposed to go to companies that agree to cover poor people doing so. So if they don't get their payment for doing that, they're not going to do it. And for Wisconsin to go back to having high-risk pools, I remember looking at them compared to regular insurance, and they certainly cost a lot more. So it's not going to be a solution to those who want to make sure that health care is cheaper if you, say, have a pre-existing condition.
Michelle, the ACA tinkering with it, the president, what do you see there?
Sure. Well, all of us now are paying higher premiums. Well, number one, because we're paying for services that we don't want. I don't want to be paying for maternity coverage. I don't need it, but yet I'm required to pay for it with my health insurance premium. But number two, we do have a number of people with high risks in the same pool as healthy people. Now, what Wisconsin had done previously were that individuals who were high risks, who had pre-existing conditions, they were able to buy insurance separately. But if we as taxpayers want to make sure it's more affordable, I think we have every right to say we want to subsidize that more, but we would at least have those individuals out of the healthy pool, which means it would cost less to insure the healthy individuals, which, again, I think gets back to the point I made previously. We need to send this back to the states. And I do think the president has done an atrocious job, and Congress did a poor job for that matter. I think they've scared people by not sharing that, yes, people who have pre-existing conditions will still have good health insurance or access to health insurance when this is all changed. We all know someone who has a pre-existing condition that was one of the impetuses for starting Obamacare in the first place. And I wish Congress would have addressed that previously, but they didn't.
Well, here's a tweet from the president. If a new health care bill is not approved quickly, bailouts, all in caps, for insurance companies and bailouts for members of Congress will end very soon. He followed that tweet with a similar message Monday, writing, if Obamacare is hurting people, and it is, why shouldn't it hurt the insurance companies, and why should Congress not be paying for what the public pays? So based on what you're seeing, Michelle, do you have a sense that Congress is concerned about this message from the president?
I don't know if the president really will be able to follow through with all of his tweet threats, which he happens to do on a regular basis. I do actually think Congress should be a part of Obamacare, what Obama did to pull them out of the insurance pool, I think, was not right. But nonetheless, I think he's just trying to encourage them to act, you know, putting some pressure or having the insurance companies put pressure on Congress to say, hey, you guys have to come to find a deal, find a way to get this fixed, because the president's going to cut off our subsidies. So we'll have to see if Donald Trump actually does follow through with that.
It's the Week in Review with Michelle Litchens, who is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Louis Fortas is with us as well. He's editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former Democratic state representative. We're hearing from you as well at 800-642-1234. As we turn to news involving Russia, the Wall Street Journal and Reuters respectively reporting that special counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury and issued subpoenas related to Donald Trump Jr.'s 2016 meeting with a Russian lawyer at Trump Tower. In addition, CNN is reporting that federal investigators have seized on Trump's and his associates' financial ties to Russia as a way to move their probe forward, according to people familiar with that investigation. President Trump was in West Virginia last night for a rally, didn't directly address these stories, but lambasted the Washington swamp for its focus on the story. Here's the president.
The Russia story is a total fabrication. It's just an excuse for the greatest loss in the history of American politics. That's all it is.
All right. Well, Michelle, what is your reaction to this development?
I don't always agree with Trump, but I think he's got a point. So Russia broke in to DNC. The DNC email system, right, during the election. I don't think Russia told 40,000 people in the city of Milwaukee not to turn out to vote for Hillary Clinton because she lost the state of Wisconsin. So although Russia might have meddled and, tried to influence the election in our country this year, I don't think they were trying to help Donald Trump. So they did. I just don't understand the obsession with this. You know, this morning, Judicial Watch had released emails from Hillary Clinton's assistant that were supposed to be confidential. I mean, this is actually breaking the law, the fact that Hillary Clinton had her own server. I mean, we don't talk about any of that anymore, and that was actually breaking the law, and yet we're fixated on Russia and the fact that they broke into the DNC email system and released that information that was hurtful to Hillary Clinton.
Let's get Louis here to respond. Robert Mueller, a grand jury issuing subpoenas. What do you make of it?
I think this is, I disagree totally with Michelle. I think this is a very serious issue when you'd have a foreign country, especially an adversary like Russia, meddling in our elections. I mean, one of the things the United States of America has always valued is the fact that we had some of the cleanest, honest, they weren't perfect elections, but they were some of the cleaner and most honest elections in the world. And we could hold ourselves up as a model, and we can encourage other countries. That's changing now. And we had this interference by an adversary in our elections. And I think the people that are true patriots, you know, Democrats, Republicans alike in the legislatures that are really concerned about this are doing the right thing by examining this. I think the Mueller investigation, Mueller's a Republican, so this idea of it being some witch hunt or something to vindicate Hillary or whatever, I mean, this is a serious Republican, Mueller. He's not some kind of partisan Democrat. What's going on is a serious issue, and unfortunately, I don't think the president has any idea of the seriousness of this, and I think he feels he can kind of bully his way through this. It's not going to happen. This is just the beginning of something that is, we saw what happened with Nixon, the beginning of something that's going to begin to deteriorate, and he's losing his popularity, he's losing his effectiveness. This is why he's trying to bully the Senate and the House to follow his leads on his issues, but it's not going to happen. This is all falling apart. It's going to happen slowly, and Mueller is going to do it systematically. But this is the beginning of an end.
Well, we're going to stop there for a quick break here. The Week in Review, and we're talking about Russia here, the Mueller investigation, sanctions as well, and then this week, remember the Russia expelling 755 U.S. diplomats. Earlier this week, we'll get to that right after this break here on the Ideas Network. Welcome back to the Week in Review, and we have our two guests here, Louis Fortas and Michelle Lichens, who stay with us. Louis is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. He's a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Michelle is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Staying on the topic here, just for another moment on Russia, one day after signing into law a bill, the president tweeted, quote, "Our relationship with Russia is at an all-time and very dangerous low. You can thank Congress, the same people that can't even give us health care." Do you agree with the president, Michelle?
I think we are at a tumultuous time with Russia right now, and you see Congress out there attacking Russia on a regular basis. All of the media is out for Russia, so I don't think they're helping that cause at all either. And I think that Russia is far less likely now to help us in the Middle East with the sanctions that we're imposing on them. But obviously, we need to hold Russia responsible for Ukraine and other things that they've done in the world. And I understand exactly why Congress is doing what they're doing, but I don't think that Washington is all behaving like they should. I think Congress does not trust the president to do his job, and the president's obviously given them an opportunity to not trust him. So this really is something that the president should be taking care of, and Congress kind of stepped in, and I don't know if that was necessarily the right thing to do.
Louis, and we also learned this week President Putin has announced that Russia is expelling 755 U.S. diplomats and technical personnel in retaliation against new U.S. sanctions proposed against Moscow. Does this concern you?
What the Russian approach to dealing with the U.S. has been kind of a tit for tat. So if we would cut back on something, they would do the exact same thing back to us. And when President Obama cut back on the personnel that they could have at their embassies and consulates in the U.S. and also confiscated or held or whatever term you want to use, two of their buildings in the United States, Russia didn't respond. And the reason many people believe they didn't respond is that the Trump administration was saying, don't worry about it, don't do anything, we'll take care of it. And there was this cozy relationship. You have never heard Trump say a negative thing about Putin or Russia. And so what was going on was something very strange, that you have this adversary that all of a sudden Trump seems to be embracing and saying nice things about. So what's happened, I think, right now is that after trying to play Trump and the Americans reacting to this and even the Republicans now pulling back, they overwhelmingly passed this bill that said Trump could not cut back on the sanctions of any kind without, you know, the approval of Congress. I think the Russians are giving up on him, saying, you know, this guy can't deliver for us anymore. We thought we had somebody that we could kind of control, and that's falling apart. And so now they're going back to their old tactic. They said, okay, so now we'll go back to the tit for tat, and we're going to reduce the number of people in Russia equal to the number of people Russians allow in the U.S. in the embassies and consulates. So that's what's going on. This is a kind of a long overdue, from Putin's point of view, reaction to Obama's actions in response to Russia meddling into the U.S. elections.
Turning our attention now to immigration and taking your calls, 800-642-1234. President Trump made headlines this week when he supported a proposal to cut legal immigration in the U.S. in half within a decade. Is this a good idea or not? Weigh in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page later on. We'll also be checking in on staffing changes at the White House, and was it a good idea for former Chief of Staff Reince Priebus to resign? You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. So President Trump embraced a proposal on Wednesday to slash legal immigration to the U.S. in half within a decade by sharply curtailing the ability of American citizens and legal residents to bring family members into the country. The bill would institute a merit-based system to determine who is admitted to the U.S. and granted legal residency green cards, favoring applicants based on skills, education, and language ability rather than relations with people already here. Lewis, what do you make of this bill?
Well, first of all, I think it's a terrible policy, and I'm not alone in thinking this. There's a bipartisan opposition in both the House and the Senate to this bill. Immigration has been what our country's built on. I mean, you go back to, unless you're a Native American, you know, one of your relatives came here, or your ancestors came here as an immigrant. This country is built on immigration, and the immigrants bring, in many cases, a lot of energy, a lot of entrepreneurial energy. And if you look at the number of businesses, new businesses created by immigrants, it's very high. I mean, Google was started by an immigrant. So I think that this is a terrible idea. I think the business community needs various, labor. We're going to have certain labor shortages.
Well, let's get Michelle to jump in here, and as a small business owner as well. Michelle, what do you think?
I agree we have a labor shortage, and I would love to see more immigrants coming into this country, quite honestly. But if you look back at our immigration system, I mean, up until 1965, we were very strict about the immigrants we allowed in this country, which are most of our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents. And our country was built on immigrants, and I'm so thankful that my family was able to come to this country and create a better life for themselves. But this is nothing new. They were discussing putting some of these restrictions on in 2007, and most of the Senate Democrats supported this idea at the time. Now, obviously, because everyone hates Trump, you know, Trump, the Democrats won't support any of his ideas. I do think most Americans support a lot of the requirements that are in this bill, that immigrants would not be able to receive welfare when they move to this country. We want immigrants to speak English. I mean, if we look back at our ancestors when they came here, they wanted their children to learn English. They wanted to assimilate into American culture. They wanted to be Americans. Now we see so often immigrants coming to this country, they're not learning English, they're not becoming a part of American culture, they're keeping their own, and they're living in small segments together, and that's not what our country is about. I want to see more immigrants. I do think, though, putting some restrictions, and I think Democrats agree as well that our immigration system is a bit broken. We need to bring people out of the shadows. We need to completely reform the immigration system we have right now. I don't believe what the president is doing is really going to affect a large number of immigrants. It's just the extended family members. You would still be able to bring a spouse or a child if you were an American citizen.
Well, let's quickly get a response here from Jim in Janesville. Jim, jump in here.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Yeah, just cutting the legal immigration in half is only going to hurt our country. And I don't think that the Senate or Congress is going to pass the bill in the first place. So it's going to be another loss for Trump. Thank you.
Michelle, quickly, as we wrap up immigration, we want to go to staffing here. What would you respond?
You know, I think this is just a drop in the bucket when it comes to immigration reform, but I actually do think this has a good chance of passing through Congress.
Well, let's talk then about staffing changes at the White House last Friday afternoon. It seems like eons ago, President Trump announced he had named U.S. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly as his new chief of staff, displacing Wisconsin's Reince Priebus, who says he resigned Thursday night. Priebus had served as chief of staff since the start of Trump's administration in January and had been a key figure in Trump's transition from candidate to president. Michelle, what's your reaction to this resignation?
Well, first of all, I'm sad because I think Reince is a really smart man, and I thought he was very level-headed, and he was probably trying to ground the White House a bit. But it was unfortunate because he was never allowed to be a real chief of staff. You know, a chief of staff is supposed to be the guardian of the president. Everyone goes through Reince or the chief of staff to get to the president, and that never happened. The president always had an open door with so many of his people and his top advisors. And so Reince was not able to be a gatekeeper at all. So I am hoping that General Kelly will be able to bring that discipline to the White House, and perhaps we'll start seeing a president and his White House behaving more like a president.
Well, Lewis, this resignation came after a really crude verbal tirade by then-Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci about the president's staff, including Reince Priebus. And meanwhile, Scaramucci was fired by new chief of staff John F. Kelly after 10 days on the job. Kelly's first move on the job is to fire Scaramucci. So what's going on here in your eyes in the West Wing?
Well, I generally agree with Michelle on this. I think Reince, who is a mainstream kind of traditional Republican, tried to do the normal job, but he was doing the normal job with a not normal president. And so I think he was in a real tough situation. He had Bannon there who was, you know, working against him. He had the family, his daughter Ivanka and Jared, the son-in-law. And so I think Reince did not have a chance, and I don't think if there was any lack of skill on his part. I think he probably did as well as anyone could have done in that situation. So we'll see what Kelly can do. Kelly's coming in with his kind of Marine discipline, and you know, he's going to be going up against Bannon, and he's going to be going up against Ivanka, and what's going to happen when Ivanka wants to go see her dad, and she thinks it's important, and how is Kelly going to deal with that? And so I question, you know, 6 months, a year from now, whether Kelly's still there. And then if Kelly can't do it, then the question is, can anyone do that job? And is anyone willing to step into that job, understanding that everybody before him has, you know, failed because of the way it's been structured?
And we're going to leave it right there. Thanks to Michelle and Lewis. Michelle Litchens, a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. And we had Lewis Fortas, who was just talking there, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. He's a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly in this installment of Week in Review. The Joy Cardine Show is produced by Brianne Shasso, Bill Martins, and Keely Boltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy. And by the way, Joy is back on Monday, and it's been a pleasure this week here on the Ideas Network. Coming up Monday at this time, we consider the effects of boredom and ageism on our health with guests from the blog and podcast. Hope you can stay with us on Monday here on the Ideas Network.